Good morning and welcome to Second Breakfast with Lucas and Phil. I'm Lucas.
I'm Phil.
And you know what, Phil? Today we have a very special episode planned for episode. You guys. You know why that is today, Phil?
Why?
Because we've already recorded this one once.
This is not part two. It was going to be part two because we were going to continue. But the last episode was such a technical disaster for some reason. I think it was your internet. I think your internet was already suffering signs of whatever ended up happening to your internet.
Because our listeners do not know. So we recorded last Friday, so a week ago from where we're recording now. And then on Saturday, my internet went down. Well, by the time the Cox guy came and got it all fixed, finally, it was realized what had happened is the cables had lit on fire, my coaxial cables running into my house. So my house could have burnt down. The guy was like, I've never seen this before.
That's scary.
It was crazy. But that is two fires on and in my house in the past month and a half.
What was the other fire? Did I know about this other fire?
I think you did. You remember this? I had a Glowforge. It was a laser engraver. And I tried to engrave something too much and blew up my machine in my garage.
So a Glowforge, explain to the people what a Glowforge is.
Super cool machine, does a lot. It's a laser engraver, so you put in your design on the computer, you align it just right, it's super precise. And then it burns whatever you want into whatever you want with a laser. So it can do metal, wood, leather, glass. I was making some cool acrylic stuff. Anyway.
But
it's only supposed to cut through things a quarter inch thick. And I thought, you know what? Let's push the limits here. Not a good idea.
Tell me exactly. So you set the whole thing up and you put in your...
I was trying to make boxes, and it was cutting it, but because the wood was so thick, it had to cut at such a high power that it lit it on fire and burnt up the machine. So
it's not funny at all, because it cost you a lot of money. Lost a ton of money on this.
Yeah, I'm actually doing this from a cardboard box under a bridge because of that. So it's hilarious, Phil.
Yeah. I've always thought it would be funny for Lucas to be homeless.
We've been blessed, and you know, it costs money, but it was a mistake and something we can learn from. So,
hey.
We've been going for quite a few minutes and haven't talked about anything. So, Phil, most important question of the day, what's the best thing you had to eat this week?
Oh, man, the best thing I had to eat this week. Still the same. It hasn't changed since we tried to record this episode before, and it is my wife's amazing chili with almond flour muffins. You throw one of the muffins inside the chili to thicken it, and it's amazing. Because first of all, the chili is really good and flavorful. With no beans, by the way. No beans. Don't put beans in your chili, people. It just interrupts the flavor of the meat and the sauce.
Don't put
beans in your chili.
And we had this argument last week, but nobody knows about it. Is because if you're poor, you have to put beans in your chili because you can't afford that much meat. So if you want more than two bites of chili, you have to put beans. I have award-winning chili. I have won contests with my chili, and I put three to five different types of beans depending on the day.
But were you competing against people with no beans in their chili?
There were some, yes. Yes, some rich people lowered themselves down to come to our chili competition. I had to think. It's been years. It's been years. I don't enter those competitions anymore because I'm too vain.
Okay. So what's the best thing you had to eat this week?
Sometime I had good things to eat. I made some, or Tori and I made some chicken strips this last week. So I'm gluten-free, as most of our listeners know. And so chicken strips are hard because if I go somewhere, I don't eat them. And anyway, so we've tried them at home before with just gluten-free flour. And they were okay, but we added something, and it's a secret recipe, so I can't tell everybody, but if you text me, I'll tell you. Anyway, added a secret ingredient to this
secret
batter.
Ingredient? It's not cocaine. It's not something illegal, is it?
not something illegal. Absolutely not. Only illegal in Puerto Rico. No, we added some stuff, and then my brother got me for Christmas. He got me. It's called Meat Church. Have you heard of Meat Church?
No, I have not. So Meat Church. It sounds like a church I would want to go to, though.
Yes. It is. They make barbecue seasonings, and they actually have a restaurant somewhere. But anyway, so Meat Church barbecue, and so there's this seasoning called Holy Cow, and so I put that onto my chicken, and then we dipped the chicken in the eggs and the batter, and then we threw it into a pan with just a little bit of oil and kind of flipped it. You know, we didn't want to. We didn't put it in a deep fryer. We just put it in, like, pan fried it. But oh my goodness, like. I was telling Tori, normally with, like, fried chicken and stuff, eating it at home is like, well, it's pretty good. But, like, if I ordered this at a restaurant, like, I wouldn't be, like, crazy about it. You know, like, we just haven't perfected. Yeah, yeah. This one, I was like, I want more. Like, I need this from a restaurant. Like, if I were at a restaurant and I got this, I would order it again. Like, immediately.
Right. Awesome.
You know, it was good. It was really,
Meat
really
Church.
Good.
So.
Meat Church. Meat Church. So they had
Holy Cow by Meat Church. Is that the secret ingredient?
No. I added something else to the batter.
Oh, there's another secret ingredient.
Yeah. So, but Holy Cow, I've got Holy Voodoo, I've got Honey Hog, and I've got a fajita. But they
now,
have
Holy Voodoo, that doesn't sound very Christian.
It's a little spicy. A little spicy. Just like our podcast.
Sounds a little
Phil.
Satanic, too.
Is that what our podcast is? Little satanic. I'm going to go.
But bye. What? Yeah. You're going to go? What?
I don't want to be on a satanic podcast. Oh.
All right. Well, what's the next thing? We have a Gen Z word or something like that?
Yeah. We're going to go back to TikTok trends of the week because I don't remember what Gen Z word we did. Okay. TikTok trend of the week. Phil, your TikTok trend of the week is called the Wipe It Down Challenge.
The Wipe It Down Challenge. So I'm going to say Wipe It Down is a dance. That's what I'm going to say.
All right. Hey, you know what? You're close. You're right there. So how this works, there's a song, and it's like, wipe, wipe, wipe it down, wipe. And so what you do is you, like, stand in front of a mirror, and you, like, wipe it back and forth, and then when it's like, wipe it down. So you, like, wipe the cloth over the mirror where you can't see you for just a second, and then you'll, like, use that. And you transition, and so you would, like, pause the video, and you go change. And so you'll, like, change to something else, or, like, somebody else will jump in the frame or whatever. You'll, like, wipe it down and, like, pull it back, and it'll be you, like, looking all spooked because of what just happened. There's a lot of different ways people take this. You know, they'll jump in with friends. Like, husbands and wives will do it together. Or, like, they'll, like, switch clothes through that transition. It's weird.
That kind of sounds like fun.
Yeah.
But a lot of work. People go into a lot of effort for these things.
Phil, if you and I wanted to put more effort into this podcast, we could make a TikTok channel and, like, do stuff together like that.
Nah. But,
I agree.
We just barely can get one episode a quarter recorded here.
This is your third episode of the decade.
So are we ready for the main course, or is there another intro thing that we do?
We've got dad stories with Lucas.
Dad stories with Lucas.
As I said,
dad stories with Lucas. Do you remember what it is?
Yeah, that's what I was looking back to check because I remember I said, like, I'm gonna post a picture of this. I remember what it was now because I was like, it was a good one, and you're gonna remember it now, so it's great.
Okay.
The week after Christmas, we went to Branson with my family, up to good old Baptist Vegas, and had a good time in the mountains, went all over the place, and got to do some hiking.
Yeah.
All that to say, so we're in Branson. When you're in Branson, you go eat things because that's what you do. So we went to Paula Deen's restaurant, which is known for
butter.
A lot of butter and maybe a little bit of racism, so you have to be careful and avoid that part. So we went to this restaurant, and it's like family-style dining. So we ordered, and we got rotisserie chicken and ribs, and they were pretty good. And they got, like, chicken and dumplings and stuff, and enjoyed those. But mashed potatoes were really good. Cream corn was really good. And apparently the mac and cheese must have been exceptional because My niece, Lily, she ate an entire family-sized mac and cheese. Like, they just will continue to bring
How
it
old is Lily? She's not 17.
No, she is like a year and a half.
She's
2 months younger than Naomi, which Naomi, in an effort to keep up because she has the competitive spirit of her parents, ate probably 3/4 of a family-sized mac and cheese. And then just like doesn't go to sleep, but basically passes out in my lap. And like, so she's just sitting there and her head is hanging off of my lap into the aisle. And she's just completely limp, like in this daze, like eyes glazed over in this like mac and cheese coma.
A mac and cheese induced coma. That's insane.
Yeah. She's just
actually, actually, if I could eat that much mac and cheese, I think that sounds great. I would love to have a coma like that. Just a brief.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Well, let's eat some main course. I'm tired of these appetizers. I have my coffee, got my orange juice.
Yeah, I'm ready. I have an appetite now.
Mmm, delicious. All right, so we've had this conversation. So, which means one of two things. Either A, we're going to breeze through and forget to say a lot of stuff that's important, or B, it's going to be even better because we've had a chance to redigest it. So, it's like a cow chewing their cud.
Exactly.
We're just going to like puke it back into our mouths and chew it up again for you guys.
Yeah.
So, the true meaning of second breakfast.
For those of you who haven't turned off the podcast at this point.
Yes, if you were wondering.
The idea of vomiting.
Puke or no puke. Speaking of that, we've been watching Lord of the Rings. And so there's the scene where the Merry and Pippin are on top of the big tree guy, tree beard. And Pippin is like, oh, yes, we need to go back that way because the closer we are to danger, the farther we are from harm. And the tree beard kind of looks at him kind of funny and he goes, that doesn't make sense to me, but you are very small. So maybe you're right. So I've been saying that to Naomi, you know, and she like asks for a Lara bar right after she eats breakfast. Like,
right.
That doesn't make sense to me, but you are very small.
You are very small. What does that have to do with our conversation? I have
no
idea.
I was just thinking as I was talking that, you know, you're like that. That doesn't make sense to me, but you are very small. So, small brain. Anyway, come back. Here we go, Phil. Let's dive into this together.
Let's do it.
So we wanted to talk a little bit. I read this. It was a story by David Reiser, and it includes a quote from Reverend Sam Pasco, which is a short history of Christianity. And it says, Christianity started in Palestine as a fellowship. It moved to Greece and became a philosophy. It moved to Italy and became an institution. It moved to Europe and became a culture. And it came to America and became an enterprise. And then to explain this to his students, he says an enterprise is a business. So in this guy's classroom, one of the youngest students raises her hands and she says, a business, but isn't the church supposed to be a body? And he says, yes. And she says, well, if a body becomes a business, isn't that a prostitute?
Yeah.
And so, like, this is one of those deals where we're going to have a great conversation on it because we did last week. But, you know, it's like that. I think at first glance, especially like looking at it on Facebook, you're scrolling through, you're ready to be convicted because you're already wasting time.
Right.
And so it kind of strikes really hard. Like it's a really good gut punch, which I think is necessary to us, you know, as we read and are looking and like God is calling to us. Like sometimes that does look like a gut punch. But what are your initial reactions here, Phil?
Well, I mean, my initial reaction is, yeah, I mean, that's the idea that a body would become a business. That's really an interesting insight. And I think, you know, is it correct? Is it an analogy that breaks down? Sure. But I don't know. The more we think about it, so, you know, let's think about, you know, the church as the bride of Christ. Mm-hmm. You know, we make that a business. You know, basically what we're doing in some ways, aren't we selling Jesus to people? in a way. I mean, we're trying to market Jesus to people. Is that a good thing, a bad thing? I don't know. What's, you know, in what ways are we making that a business? I think motivation might have a lot to do with whether then you could say, well, this is just like prostituting Christ or prostituting ourselves as the body of Christ. Yeah. You know, if we're, I think motivation might have something to do with it. So I don't know. I kind of had a thought, maybe as both church staff members, maybe let's just kind of answer the question, in what ways do you personally, or do I personally, tend to make my church like a business? In what ways do I treat it like a business? And is that good or bad?
Yeah. And that's...
So I'm turning it back to you.
I think that's the key here.
In what ways do you think you have been tempted to or have had a tendency to turn church or ministry into a business?
Yeah. So first off, like I get paid ministry,
yeah.
Right? Like, you know, and especially like you look at the early church, like they took care of Paul, right? Like they provided for Paul to do ministry.
Right.
So he could go and start other churches. Now, I don't know about other, like, I don't think they had a huge staff at like the church in Ephesus. I don't know if they supplied for their pastor. I don't know how it all worked, but I'm assuming there were, you know, it said they all brought to the table, right? Like what they had, and they would care for one another each as they had need. So I know like they were taking care of each other, but I doubt that looked like a salary and a package, you know, where I have, you know, there's like healthcare involved. There's like I got a Christmas bonus. There's all of these things. Like that's obviously like a business thing. Now, I don't necessarily think, I don't think that's a bad thing. You know, as we look at like a, in the business as, you know, or the church as a business and what's good, what's bad, what's wrong.
Yeah.
I would say that that's not wrong. Is, you know, I think without that, you run the risk of both parties taking advantage of each other very quickly.
So what do you mean by that? I mean, like, if we're like the Mormons, you know, they don't pay any ministers, the RLDS. I grew up in Independence, Missouri, where that sort of the home of a lot of those organizations. I know the Mormons are based in Salt Lake City now, but they're still sort of an original home of the Mormons back in Independence, Missouri, where I grew up. And they don't pay ministers. There are other groups that, you know, that are not really, and I guess there are sort of mainline Christian groups that don't pay ministers. But what, I mean, what would that be like if we didn't pay ministers? I mean, what would be the problem with that?
Sorry, you froze for a second.
Well, I mean, my question is, what would be the problem if we didn't pay ministers?
Well, I think you the issues we run into are, you can see it in some of the smaller churches that maybe they, you know, with a part-time pastor, and I have friends who are in part-time ministry, it's very difficult to love the church well whenever you're also having to work to provide, you know, like,
yeah,
because if your time is split, it's hard to do what needs to be done for the body of Christ. Like, it is a full-time job to care for the sheep, to feed the sheep, to go visit the sheep in the hospital, or to
counseling or meet with people.
Right. To plan things, to look out, to go and visit people in the neighborhood. And but again, I think this comes back to where you look at this model, and there's everything right about it on one side, but it can be everything wrong as well. Because while I have a lot of friends that I see that take this full-time or a part-time position at church where they're being provided for and do everything, you know, within their power to be good stewards of that time and to love people well, I know others and even myself at times where I have found myself and had to repent from not wisely using that time, you know, and being a disgruntled employee, like, well, I'm not getting paid enough for this. Like, probably not, but that's fine. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And there are guys who for their whole careers take advantage of this. Or,
yeah,
you know, we often like to point the finger at Joel Osteen, and I don't know his heart. I don't know the guy. And so I'm afraid to, you know, pour conviction over, or I guess point that out in someone else, because I don't want to have a log in my own eye. But it
right.
is, you see all these pastors that are making, you know, a lot of money, and some of them you wonder, you know, what,
yeah,
what are the, is there a love of money there that wouldn't be if they weren't, you know, on staff?
Yeah. And you know, my experience with and it really was just a pretty short time in my life. I was on staff at churches almost my entire adult life until around my 50th birthday, and then I went through five or six years where I was not on staff. I wasn't getting paid to go to church, you know. I joke that was the first time in my whole adult life I'd ever been paid not to go to church. And I would say one of the things I discovered, though, Lucas, that I think is really worth mentioning, especially if church staff people ever listen to this podcast, is that I noticed, as a layperson, if you understand that term, I noticed as a layperson that staff members tend to take advantage of their volunteers and leaders, because there is a because staff members work so hard. And I don't know if this would be different if we weren't paid or not. I think staff members work so hard, and if they can find somebody who will work as hard as they will, then we tend to really pull on those people. And I'm just as guilty as anybody else. You tend to really pull on your best people because so many other volunteers look at, and this is sort of a, you know, it's sort of a circular problem. I think the reason that happens is because so many church members and volunteers say, well, he gets paid to do that. She gets paid to do that. You know, that's what they're supposed to do. The people that are paid are supposed to do all this work. And so then we have this poverty of commitment. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We have low level of investment. I wonder sometimes if nobody got paid, probably a lot less stuff would get done.
Well,
I don't know.
I think it's something pure, and you lose some things too, but you gain some things, and I think that's really in all of it. You know, we're you know, people getting paid in church for different positions, where you lose some of the ministry aspects that are going on. You lose the ability to do that. You lose the laser light shows and the beautiful sanctuaries. Like,
right,
you
right,
can't
right.
pay staff members. Like, that stuff doesn't get put together.
No.
But
which, you know, I don't know. How much of that stuff do we really need?
Exactly. And you gain a purity that I think is really hard to find otherwise. And then this is coming from a paid church staff member. You know,
right,
like,
yeah.
But I think in this, like, it boils back down into the question here of what is the difference between a prostitute and a lover? And so, like...
Oh, know, yeah, interesting.
It's mostly older people listening to the podcast anyway. We're not worried, super worried about that. But the difference is love, right? Like, you,
right.
A prostitute is paid something for their services, and a lover loves freely.
Yeah.
And so I think, like, you don't want the church to be a prostitute. It's not about, you know, getting rid of everything that remotely looks like a business, because a prostitute and a lover can look remarkably similar.
Similar.
But a lover does it out of love, and a prostitute does it to get paid. And so it's all about the heart there, and the issues of the heart, right? Because a lover is still cared for by God, right? Like, God is still providing for the people that love him. He's still giving them things. He's still helping them and aiding them and keeping them provided for, right? Like, when I look at the fields of the grass, like, that wither and fade, God still clothes them. How much more will he clothe you, right? The sparrows, how much more does he love you? Like, all of these things we see in Scripture where God is taking care of his church, his bride, his people. And so, like, it's not about that. It's about love, and it's a heart issue. And so whether the staff is paid or not, if the staff have the correct heart and the church has the correct heart, but I think really the issue here is it comes back around to that consumerism in the American church. And so maybe it's less of the church becoming a business as much as it Christians becoming consumers.
Yeah, that's a good... That's a, and you're changing the subject, but that's okay. It's sort of this sort of melds into sort of naturally segues into the, you know, this. I know we didn't that last stuff we talked about. We didn't really talk about that last week, but this is something we talked about last week, the first time we tried to record this episode, and the idea that our motive, I forgot what I was going to say.
Yeah, the idea that our motives, our motivations are...
Something like that.
Welcome to Second Breakfast with Lucas and Phil. I'm Lucas. That's Phil.
I'm old. What the heck just happened to me? I got distracted by something. You went offline there for a second, but so what was it we were talking about? Sorry.
Just, you know, the
I totally got distracted over here.
Consumerism in the church.
Yeah, consumerism in the church. Oh, my gosh. Lucas, okay, so my brain is back.
Welcome back, Phil.
Here we are. So, he is my friend, but he's my brother-in-law, we went to visit them over Christmas holiday, and we went to their church. And it's, you know, it was a very traditional Baptist church, which there are not all that many traditional Baptist churches left in America. This is in Atlanta area, Rome, Georgia, which is a great town, by the way. Never been to Rome, Georgia. Plug for Rome, Georgia. What a great little town.
I heard it wasn't built in a day.
No, it was not. It's true. Anyway, so, Lucas enjoyed that one all by himself. We're in Rome. It's a little southern town, and I went to this, you know, church where there's no, you know, the guy is leading songs is, you know, wearing a suit and tie, and that was Christmas Day, so, you know, they said he normally doesn't wear a tie, but he was wearing a suit and tie. A lot of times they say he'll wear, like, a coat, you know, a little more traditional look than the guy in jeans with the guitar, and more hymns, and we did some contemporary music. It wasn't, like, backward, but the whole, you know, there's a paper bulletin and a lot of things that are sort of the trappings of what I grew up with. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know what the beauty of this is it's so simple. You know, we went to this church and there was nothing to, you know, there may have been nothing to attract certain people to really engage. I will say it is easier for me to engage in worship in a deeper, more spiritual way in a little more contemporary, stylized environment musically, because that's the kind of music that I enjoy more. And there's more of a focus, I think, on the moment of encountering God, whereas the songs that are part of a service where the lights are all up and you're reading out of a hymnal, or there are words on the screen, and it's somehow less focused. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I will also say there was a peace about it and a calmness about it that was really nice. And here's what my brother-in-law said. He said, so, you know, this isn't maybe the church we would have chosen if we had gone church shopping. He said, but we made the decision to just go to the closest church to our house so that we could say to our neighbors, we go to that church right there. Come with us just to this church right here. And it hit me. I said, yeah, Paul, because when you say to your neighbors that we don't go to that church there, we go to that church 20 miles away, what you're doing is you're sort of passing on consumerism to that new convert or that prospect or that person that doesn't even know Jesus yet. Yeah. You're saying, well, you have to find just the right church. Yeah. And I think that's a powerful decision that they made, just to go to the closest one to them. That was, you know, it's obviously a Bible believing church. It's a Baptist church, and we are, you know, we grew up Baptist, both he and I and our wives. But it's you know, something we're comfortable with. You know, he didn't go to the Catholic parish next to the house. He went. He did find a church that, on some level, he was comfortable with. But he didn't go shopping.
Yeah,
like a consumer.
That's crazy, because I think we get caught up in the preferences so much.
Yeah,
you know, like it's, we treat it in the, what you just explained. It's like, well, like, we don't, Tori and I, when we lived in Del City, we would go to Dunkin' Donuts and get like coffee. Well, there was a Dunkin' Donuts that was like 2 minutes from our house. It was just on the other side of the highway from where we lived. We could cross under the bridge and get there super quickly. However, that Dunkin' Donuts did not do a good job at making coffee. We would go and consistently we'd get like the bottom of the pot grounds in our iced coffee, or they would use hot coffee and pour it over ice, which gives you a super watered down,
super water, yeah.
Not good, right? And so we would drive 10 minutes out of the way to go to a different Dunkin' Donuts to get coffee because it was better. My preference was for that other Dunkin' Donuts. And I treat church where I say, well, I really like the laser light show. I like contemporary worship better. And this preacher, like, I really like him better. And I like this. And and I like that. And so we put it in. And it's almost like you say, well, this is better than this scale. And we kind of push out location. We push out God. And we push out until it's just like, this church fits all of these different things the same as I would treat a Chili's or an Applebee's or anything else. And maybe it's not just the closest geographical church that you have to go there, because there are some churches, there are some Baptist churches that are not good churches.
Yeah,
you know?
Well, yeah, and that's the other thing. This the whole thing, I don't think you can just go... Yeah. You can't ignore something if there's a major problem, or if it just doesn't.
Well,
I don't know, but I think you have to balance. You have to be mature about it. You have to say, "Hey, is this a real issue, or is this just my preference?" Right.
Well, and that's why this whole conversation, this part, the whole thing, it's not as easy as saying if they do A, then B, if they do C, then D.
Right.
Right? Like, it's not as easy as saying, well, if a church does this, then they're wrong, or like, you should go to just this church. Like, it's not like that. It's not an easy conversation where it's an easy solution. You know, this isn't basic math. 2 + 2 = 4, that's great, but now we're working with Einstein. Like, let's figure this out, you know?
Yeah.
But if you're trying to use your brain to figure all this out, then you've already lost, right? Like, you're never going to find the answer logically. Like, it's through Scripture. It's through following God, aligning your heart with Him, as we've talked a lot about being in one spirit with God, you know? And as I've been reading and studying and praying and making, you know, different decisions, and one of the things Oswald Chambers points out is, he says, you know, if you're asking God for an answer, He will not give it to you. He just will let you grow closer to Him. Like, it's not about, like, God, give me the answer here. God, give me the answer. It's, God, let me know You better so I can walk alongside You and I will know the answer without asking.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's the deal. It's not about an answer.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, can't beat Oswald Chambers. So I think we're going to have to quit here. Move on, and we're going to have to continue this conversation.
We're
just scratching the surface.
Yeah, and I think next week let's try to dive a little bit more into just talking about that, the original statement that he makes, which is
because we sort of skipped over some of that discussion, which I think is important. But we will. So next time we'll decide. We're going to get to that whole, read that statement again.
Yeah, Christianity started in Palestine as a fellowship. It moved to Greece and became a philosophy. It moved to Italy and it became an institution. It moved to Europe and became a culture. And it came to America and became an Enterprise by Reverend Sam Pasco.
Reverend Sam Pasco. P-A-S-C-O? P-S-K-O? How do you spell that?
P-A-S-C-O-E.
That's what I said. Okay. P-A-S-C-O-E. So, a minute of culture.
Yes, Phil. Give us a minute of culture.
So I have this. There, I don't know. This may completely fall flat. We may have to do something different. But did you see Spider-Man?
Yes, I saw Spider-Man.
Great movie. We're not gonna spoil that. But it's great. If you haven't seen it, go see it. Surely everyone's seen it. But especially by the time this airs. But that I really enjoyed that. But I have this is curmudgeonry with Uncle Phil right now. Just for a minute, I'm being a curmudgeon again.
There's Pappy Phil.
With Pappy Phil. There's a commercial, a Taco Bell commercial. That I think it's Taco Bell. On TV, have you seen this commercial where the two, it's a girl and a guy sitting together on a couch eating Taco Bell, and he's like showing her how he dips his chip and then sticks it in the taco, and then she, have you seen this?
No.
She like, oh man. So anyway, I'm gonna try, Lucas, and you can tell me if this is a cultural thing, but it drives me nuts. So the dipping the chip thing, that's fine. But then she basically says, okay, here's my move. She takes her little bag of chips and trades it for his big old Crunchwrap thing. She basically steals his meal. And she's super rude and snarky about the whole thing. And he's like, I can't believe we must have different definitions of sharing. She's like, maybe, maybe not. And so I'm like, is that cool now? Is that funny now for one person just to bully another person? Is a woman bullying a man? But she was totally bullying him. No one else has seen this commercial, am I the only person that has to see commercials?
Out of us two, you're the only one. But that doesn't mean the rest of our listeners. So I don't know. I didn't have internet for a week, and so,
oh my goodness.
And I don't have regular TV anyway. But here's what I would say, right? Like, is that if Tori tried to take my burrito or whatever, I don't know what I'd do. Like, Naomi tries to steal my food a lot, and I'm like, baby, no.
You know? Right? Right. But this guy just totally, he's like shocked, and he just sort of takes it. I'm like, wow. All right, I guess that's cool. I don't know. Maybe, I can't understand it. There must be some cultural thing behind it, some message there, but it's so disturbing to me. And maybe it's because the poor guy loses his food. And I'm very sensitive about that.
You're like, he was hungry.
Don't let her take your food. If she takes your food, she doesn't really love you. I want to scream into the TV. She doesn't care about you.
No, I think the message really here is like, she's going to pay for that anyway. She's going to have diarrhea and he's not. So
it is Taco Bell. That's true.
It is Taco Bell. You know what, Phil? I thought for the minute of culture, you were going to go on and on about the Chiefs and how the Colts didn't make the playoffs. So,
poor Colts.
I'll bring up my misery. I've been crying for like a week.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
I had some friends who were Steelers fans who I talked some trash to about how there was no way the Colts would lose to the Jags and let them in.
And can you believe it? The Steelers are in the playoffs.
So first off, I love the Colts. They didn't make it. And because they didn't make it, the Steelers, whom I hate, did. It's just terrible. Just terrible. So this cinnamon roll tastes like dog poop.
I'm sorry, Lucas.
That's
yeah, well,
okay.
the Colts will play football next year. So, yeah, well, man, this has been great. Is that all we do? We don't do anything else, right?
Yeah, no, if you
it's
have any questions,
so long
comments,
between
concerns,
episodes.
Or anything else, please send those over to Gordon Small, and he will not answer. We love you guys. Thanks for listening. If you want to hear some more episodes, we will try. If you have something interesting you've read or looked at that you think would be fun to have Phil and I discuss and forget parts of it and everything else that comes with us discussing things, send us that. We would love to we'd love to talk about what you want us to talk about.
Yeah.
Anyway, we love you guys. Thanks for listening. Phil, last words?
Love and pancakes.
Love and pancakes.
See you later. Bye.
Bye.